Hi, this is Brita Long, the author and founder of The Happier Attorney, where we talk about how you as an attorney can improve your practice and use flat fees and use money well, and what kind of mindset will get you to the place of being able to be an attorney, have the practice that you love that fits you, not the other way around, and be a happier attorney. And today we have a very special guest. My guest is Tucker Max. Tucker is a four-time New York Times bestselling author. He graduated from law school from Duke, and he is a dear friend of mine. And the reason that we are having him on is that, A, he's a friend of mine. He had to do it. He's entertaining. But the real reason is that he knows attorneys. He works with attorneys all the time, even though he never sat for the bar. And he is the ultimate truth teller. He has the ability to read people like no one I have ever met. And he doesn't pull punches. And you will see today our podcast and our YouTube video. It goes off slightly. And he turns around and coaches me. So for those of you who have ever had me call you on some stuff, yeah, he turns around and calls me on it. So I hope you enjoy the video, and here it is. Welcome, please welcome Tucker Max. You wanted to be an attorney, or right, at least wanted enough to go to law school, right?
I wanted to, no, so that's a super interesting way to frame the question. This is super important, because what I'm about to say, I think almost every attorney I know will resonate with. I did not want to be an attorney. I made the decision to go to law school when I was like 21 years old or 22. So I was the dumbest person alive, right, at that age. And I was dumber than most 21 or 22-year-olds. Intellectually, I was very smart. But just in terms of like understanding life and myself, I was less than zero. I was negative intelligence, right? And so like I made a very important, I won't call it a life-defining, but a very important decision when I was barely old enough to drink and not experienced enough to know anything about myself. And the reason I decided to go to law school, and he, like, if we're being really, really hard core, painful, honest, if I am, the reason I went is because I had done really well in school, right? I did well in high, I cracked the school code early. So I did really well in high school, got great SATs, did really well, you know, went to a top 10 college, did very well there, graduated summa cum laude in 3 years. It was like, well, what do you do when you're a smart kid at a good school, right? I graduated from University of Chicago in 98. So at that period, there were three things, maybe four. You either went into investment banking, which I had friends who were iBankers, and they literally worked 110 hours a week and then did blow on the weekends with hookers. And I'm like, I don't want to do that. So like, but you go into it because you make money, right? You get rich. Or you become a management consultant, and they work 100 hours a week, so a little bit less. And they made substantially less money. And then they had to play the corporate game. And I'm like, no, that looks awful too. And so I didn't want to work hard, if we're being honest, those two things. And I was just self-aware enough to know I hated the actual lifestyles of my friends who were doing that. And so the other option is law school, right? Because you get to stay in school, because you can't go straight to business school. So you get to stay in school, and I was good at school. And it's high status, right? So people are like, they respect you and they think you're important and you're doing all that stuff. And it's not med school, which is a huge pain in the ass and hard to get into, right? The other option, if you're a dude, sometimes is military. And I thought about that, but my girlfriend and my dad talked me out of it, which is probably a good idea. I probably would have gotten myself in a lot of
trouble. Oh, I can't imagine.
Killed at that age. I was not.
Good God.
No, I wouldn't have been a good pick. That's why, because I wanted easy, high status. And when you're 21, you think that's law. And then you get into the actual profession. You're like, oh, hold on. Wait a minute. This isn't what I thought I signed up for. Yeah. But that, if we're being really honest, I made that decision when I was so dumb and so inexperienced. Which is why I always tell people now, go work in a law firm at any level to understand if you really like the job or not. Because That's and the problem is, like most people, and at least in my experience, I see they never, if they, most people don't like the actual job of being a lawyer. Some do, but the majority don't. And then they're either unwilling or afraid to admit that to themselves.
Absolutely. So well, you've invested a lot. And right. you do get
perks. Time and money.
You
yes,
get you instant have respect. Uh-huh. You do get, even as much as people hate attorneys and they make jokes and blah blah blah, you do get that.
Yes. Yes.
And so, you've invested a lot. And I had, I mean, you know, we'll get into my story in a minute, but as you well know, I mean, we have this mindset that I am an attorney or I'm working at Starbucks. And those are my two options. Right. Those are my absolute two options.
Because it feels that way because of golden handcuffs, right? Because you can, especially I went to Duke, right? And I got a scholarship to Duke as a white dude. So I was like, well, I'm very important and special. You know, all the bullshit you tell each other when yourself when you're in these situations. And so like, it's like I was getting offers from, you know, all the big Silicon Valley and Wall Street firms for like, that was when I was there right after the salaries made a quantum leap from like 80 to 120 or 90 to 140, whatever they were. And so it was like, I can make 140 grand working at Skadden, or I can make nothing working anywhere else. Like, yeah, I can make 50 grand or 60 grand. So it's like, it's not a decision in your mind, right? Yeah. I get status and money over here, and I get basically poverty and a lot of work over there. But you don't understand when you're in school, there's a price for that status and money.
Like, well, I'm assuming you have it. I'll tell you, you know, when I was in school, you know, as you know, single mom.
Right.
I mean, I remember thinking, even in law school, when I don't know what I would do when I make $1,500 a month. Like, I wouldn't even know what to do with that. Okay. And they, you know, keep saying, oh, the average, and this was, I mean, I graduated in 97. The average starting salary is 60,000. Okay. Yeah. God only knows where they get those numbers, but you're like, I like, I can't even imagine that yeah. kind of money. So, you know, you take out all these student loans. And then when I graduated, and this was in Seattle, you know, when I moved up to Seattle, there weren't jobs. And my starting was 30,000.
Yeah.
I had a friend in Portland, $25,000.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like, which I'm, you know, that was a gazillion years ago, but no, you're not making them. So I kind of getting to the meat. I mean, we can go through, you graduated, but you didn't right. sit for the bar, did you?
No, I never sat for the bar, which by the way, I know everyone laughs about this, but sit and think about this for a minute. I'm going to pay $250,000 to go to a school for 3 years and then not be equipped for the entrance exam to the profession.
True. True. Like,
think about
how
that's so ridiculous. It's beyond. And then everyone laughs and then goes through it anyway. It's like, wait a minute. Why? Why are you accepting that? Like, that doesn't make any sense.
That's why we're here. Okay. Yeah. That's why we are here. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing, because this entire profession is so screwed up, and yes. the powers that be, there's in my, where the leaders, I don't know where they are. They're not in the Bar Association. They're not the judges, no offense judges, but seriously, it is the emperor's walking around with no clothes and everybody's just like,
Yeah. Welcome to most of society. You're exactly true. Right. Yes.
True. True. So your writing had taken off and you're not sitting for the bar, but you are around attorneys. You've been sued.
Right.
More than once.
Three times. I won all three, but three times. Yeah.
And did well, like, yep. you know, you, whatever one means. And so you know, attorneys, and you have yep. attorneys working for you.
Yes.
What do you see in us that we don't see that is holding us back, that we tell ourselves it is good for us in our practice? This is how lawyers think.
Right.
We have to think this way, which, you know, now that I'm stepping back, you know, it's complete crap.
Yeah.
But what do you see that we don't see?
All right. So if I were to really get to the heart of it.
Get to the heart of it.
All right.
Come on. So, why do you think you're here?
Of course. So it's right. It's called the Happier Attorney Podcast. So let's just assume for a second that you have said, okay, Tucker, that's great. you made all those decisions, or really it was accidents, but like you decided not to get in the profession. I'm in the profession now. I'm not leaving the profession. So right. What do I do? Right.
Right.
All right. So the first thing I would do is I would ask myself the hardest, deepest question I could, which is, I would actually examine that question. I would start there. Do I really want to be an attorney? Right? Really. Most attorneys, in my experience, they are afraid to ask themselves that question.
It's terrifying.
Right. Because, and I'll tell you why. I'll make up numbers. Let's say 70% of attorneys, if they really ask themselves that question, would stay. Right, would keep being an attorney for good reason. That most of them are terrified of being the 30% that leave, mm-hmm. right? And so because they're so afraid they might have to leave being an attorney. And it's not leaving. It's leaving would mean admitting to themselves they wasted 3 years as a lawyer. They spent all that money, the bar, whatever. That's the idea in their head. I don't think it's a waste. You don't have to look at it that way, but that's the way they do. And so they're so terrified that they might have to admit that they would realize they don't want to be an attorney and then admit that all this stuff was a mistake, that they're unwilling to even ask themselves that question, right? And so because you won't ask yourself that question, you are now 98% of your life is locked. It is closed off to you now because you are unwilling to ask yourself a core question. Do I want to continue being an attorney? Right? And not do I like it? What do I want to do? And the first question is, do I want to keep doing this? Right? And so that's always, that's the thing I see. The number one thing is that they are unwilling to even entertain the question. But the ones that I see that are, and there are some, that are willing to even entertain that question, do I want to keep doing this? Right? They then are able to go one of two paths, right? They can be like, okay, yeah, actually, now that I think about it, there's a lot I like about being an attorney. So they can now come to it from a position of abundance instead of scarcity, right? Because refusing to ask a question immediately puts you in a fear-based scarcity mindset, right? You are at a low level of consciousness because you can only run from the notion that you might not want to do what you're doing. You don't know you don't want to do it. You don't know because you don't even ask the question. But once you ask the question, you give yourself permission to actually ask the question and to accept whatever the consequences of that are. I might decide I don't want to be an attorney anymore. I don't know, but I might decide that, and I'm going to give myself permission to really examine myself and my needs and my wants and where I am and see. A lot of those people end up coming back and realizing, no, hold on. I really do like being an attorney. I hate maybe this 40%, but this other 60% over here of the job, I really like. I actually enjoy that. And I want to commit to that, right? Then you can now look at your entire life, right? In a totally different way, because now you are choosing it instead of running from something else, right? So just the willingness to ask that question fundamentally changes everything. Then you can like decide, okay, I like this 60% of my job. I dislike this 40% of my job. So how do I make all of my job the 60% that I like? Or maybe how do I go from 60 to 80 and then 80 to 90 and then 90 to 98 maybe, right? And then 98 maybe to 100, not unthinkable. And so every attorney I know who is happy has done that, some version of that. Mm-hmm. They have ask themselves if this is the right profession for them, honestly, giving themselves permission to say it's not, which then unlocks their ability to see, is it right or not? They come into it then with a new perspective of, yes, I am choosing this, and I am choosing this part of it. Because I never met an attorney who's like, I like every part of being an attorney, who wasn't a lunatic lying to themselves.
Right.
Okay. So like, there's always going to be a part you like and a part you don't like. And so then the next question is, how do I make as much of my life as possible the part that I like, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like that is the number one question. And then because if you go down the other path of, no, I actually hate being an attorney, It's a whole separate set of things. And it's not bad, right? It's not, I went to law school, right? Yeah, I got a scholarship, but like it wasn't full. It was almost full, but I still left with loans and I still had college loans, right? And so like I had debt. And I'll be honest, like I actually got fired from Fenwick and West as a summer. So I can talk about this on this podcast because well, no one seems to be fired.
Of course you did. Like, how would you not get fired?
I got fired as a summer associate 2.5 weeks in, which is impossible. Like, you can't do that. I did it, right? And looking back on myself, it's so obvious that like whatever you want to call it, my unconscious or my higher self or whatever, knew that was not the profession for me. I would hate it, but I refused to admit that to myself. So it was like my unconscious was like, okay, dude, I'm just going to sabotage you until you are forced to realize this, until you get fired in the most public way possible. And I did. It's all in my book. I hope this will be in hell. But basically, like, I did all this stuff at this firm event and then wrote a huge email about it, laughing about it to all my friends. And because my friends are jerks, they forwarded it to all their friends. And then like the entire legal profession knew like I was the dude who got fired as a summer associate because they all read the email and thought it was hilarious. And so I was essentially blackballed from the legal profession, right? Because I was the reckless, drunken summer associate who got fired.
Right.
And so
Tucker Max.
Yeah. Okay. But see, here's the thing. I'll be totally honest. When that went down, I wasn't like, yeah, super excited. I'm out of legal profession. Like,
right.
No, of course not. Like when I got fired, I was actually really depressed for a good 2 weeks. I was borderline can't get out of bed depressed. Right. Yeah. Because obviously like I thought this is what I wanted, you know, like I didn't, what do I know? I was legit. Like, I don't think I've ever actually talked about this. No one's really ever asked, but it's true. I was borderline like, not suicidal. Cause I was, my self-awareness was so bad. I didn't have enough self-awareness to be suicidal. Like, I'm not joking about suicide. I'm joking about myself. Like, I was just like, could not get out of bed. And then I basically, I don't know, spun up a story in my head that got me out of bed. And then, I had to go back. That was my, remember, summer associate between 2 and 3L years. So I had to go back to my 3L year. I didn't have to. But I went back and I was like the dude who got fired, right? And so it was like, I actually just went into it. I was like, fine, fuck it. You guys go be lawyers. I'm not going to. And then I fully own that. Like, oh, you fucking sheep and your golden handcuffs. Which is like, there's a truth to it. But honestly, for me, a lot of it was a performance. Like,
right.
I was telling myself that story so that I didn't have to feel bad about the fact I got fired from a summer associate, which is still like, I can laugh about it now because it's kind of hilarious. It wasn't funny. It was both funny and very sad to me at the same time in the moment. Right. But the point is I forced myself out. Right, I burned the bridges behind me. You don't have to do that. Like, you can have a very honest conversation with yourself. And, you know, if you're married and you got a family, then you include your whole family. And you can say, you know what? Let's say you're part of the, I don't know, 30% who wants to leave. You say, all right, I really, really dislike this. Like, I am trapped in a profession. I feel trapped. Because you're not trapped.
I feel trapped.
The story you're telling yourself. I feel trapped in a profession where the day-to-day tasks I deeply dislike. I am whatever version of the story you tell yourself. I'm killing myself a day at a time. I'm miserable. I'm whatever. So how do I get out now? The question is not, can I get out? Because if you tell yourself, if you think the question is, can I get out? You're not getting out. Right. Just sort of like I always, as much as I love America and the Declaration of Independence, I always tell people Thomas Jefferson made a major mistake in the first sentence when he says life, or the second, third sentence, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Right. Yeah. If you tell yourself I'm pursuing happiness, you're not being happy. You're pursuing it, which is why. You named this podcast and your company the exact perfect thing. It's not called the trying to be happy attorney. It's the happier attorney.
It's right? Not the I'll be happy when.
Right. It's so, not the I'll be happy later attorney.
Right.
Right. So, if you want to be happy, you have to choose happiness now. And that means either staying an attorney and then totally crafting an attorney lifestyle that makes you happy or getting out.
Right.
Right. And you, it doesn't mean getting out doesn't mean I quit and I burn my firm down and you don't have to do what I did. You can figure out a transition plan. You can whatever. And it might be hard for a while financially and blah, blah, blah. I have never once in my life seen an attorney who could not transition out to something that they enjoyed more. I've seen plenty that would not.
Right.
Every single one could. Now, I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, if you're making $1 million a year as a partner at at Foley Lardner, no, you may not be able to go find a job that gives you the exact same monetary lifestyle. No, you may not. You may or you may not. So I'm not going to tell you, oh, you're going to make as much money, you're going to have as much status, whatever. But what you can, but what the question to ask yourself is, what is that $1 million buying?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Because if you're selling your life for it and you hate your life, maybe it's worth it to you.
Yeah.
Maybe your life's worth $1 million a year.
Well, you know, in January, just this last January, four attorneys in Kentucky killed themselves. You know, Kentucky's a pretty small, you know, four.
Right.
And I don't ask anybody to do what, you know, I'm not willing to do or haven't done. And so when we met, I was fully starting my estate planning practice in Austin.
Yep.
It blown up my life pretty good. I was pretty self-aware and unself-aware.
At the time, no, you were not very self-aware.
At the time, what did you see that I didn't see in me?
I mean, I saw someone who, so to give you guys some background, so Brita went through a coaching. We have a bunch of different programs at my company. It's called Scribe Media. And one of them is book coaching. Like, we coach you how to write your book and then publish it. And so she went through that program when I still, I don't lead the workshops anymore. Now Emily Gindelsparger leads them, who's honestly a better coach than me, but I was leading them at the time. And so Brita was in one of the early ones, probably one of the first 5 or 10.
Right.
And she was that group was amazing. Maria and Jonathan and all this. It was a great group, that one. She's talking about that 2-day workshop. And so what I saw in you was someone who you had the courage to leave, but you didn't believe you had the courage to leave. Mm-hmm. And so I saw someone who was going through a deep internal battle about who she was going to become. Right. And so all I did basically was reflect that, what I saw back on you. And then you got to see, I helped you understand what you were going through. Because, you know, it's like you can always see your friend's stuff easier than you can see your own, right? So absolutely. It's not like I'm some magician. I just saw you real clearly because I don't have any of your baggage, right? So I'm like, oh, here's a smart woman who hates the way she's being an attorney and wants to do it in a different way. But she is telling herself all these other BS stories. And so I just pointed out the BS stories to you. And then you realize, oh yeah, that's not true at all. That's not true at all. No, that's not true. And then you saw I just help you see the clear question in front of you.
Yeah.
Do I want to keep being an attorney the way I've been in the past, or do I want to do it a different way?
And what was crazy was, I mean, at the time my life was in pretty much chaos because of a real estate deal and house and the whole nine yards, but I didn't see it as chaos at all. And I remember you saying, what are you getting out of this chaos?
Yeah.
And I'm like, what chaos? This is just my life. What are you talking about? I mean, now that I had done a lot of work, I look back and I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. But it was the thought of, and I remember sitting around and, you know, there were these young kids. When I say young, they were like, you know, in their late 20s, early 30s, young kids. And they're doing things that I'm like, I didn't even know existed. You know, like Jonathan's doing these video courses and I'm looking, and not to be a jerk, but I'm like, I'm just as smart as that guy. I'm smarter than her.
Yeah, you are. You know? 100%. I would tell you if you weren't.
It was absolutely mind blowing. And then, you know, I'm like, okay, but I had to get to the point, because I remember you and I having a private conversation about practicing law, and you're like, what do you want to do? I mean, I've had this conversation with you. And I knew I didn't just want to die practicing estate planning. Right. Like, I knew that wasn't why I was here.
Yep.
And I didn't even know what it was called, but I'm like, I want to show people when they're lying to themselves. Like you just showed me, that's what I want to do. Like, I didn't even know what that meant or anything like that. And that's what I do.
Well, hold on. First, you wanted to do it for yourself.
True.
Then you wanted to help others. But see, what you're doing right there is what a lot of people do. They skip over their own work to go to helping others so they don't have to do their own.
You have to do your own or you can't help
it. You have. You're absolutely doing your work. But even intellectually then, you just did it. You were like, oh, I want to help other people do this thing that I haven't really done yet, but I know I kind of need to do and want to do. And so almost in most fields, like you pick a field, right? Most of the coaches are coaches because they are helping others do work that they are actually avoiding.
That is true. And it shows, quite frankly.
Yes.
It absolutely shows. I just, not to, you know, disparage other coaches, but I had a conversation 2 weeks ago with an attorney coach. And she might be okay on the technical whatever.
Right.
But it was very clear to me just in her demeanor and some of the things that she said. I was like, oh, that's not what I consider coaching. And anyway, I think when you're getting back to one point that you brought up that I think is important, I personally had to get to the point where I threw up my hands and was like, I need to do this. I need to do this work for me. Mm-hmm. I need to fix my shit. I need to figure out why I keep self-sabotaging, why I keep doing the things that I'm doing. I need to do that for me.
Yep.
And if that means, and I started writing and I love writing.
Yeah.
And if that means I'm living in a van down by the river, that's what it means. Like I had to give up in my head any notion of success, any notion of what I used to think of.
What you had to give up was the stories you were holding on to.
Right.
So you could write new stories.
Right. I had to give it up.
Yes.
And there were some scary times there, you know, and I could have gone back to practicing.
Easily.
And I was like, nope. And I mean, there were a couple times that I was, you know, glad you had a guest house. I mean, I was like, there was no money coming in.
Mm-hmm.
But I just kept going. I kept going. Mm-hmm. And now it's a thing.
Yep.
And it's a real thing that I'm really proud of.
Yes.
And I was a good attorney and I was proud of my practice for 20 years.
Right.
Nothing like this. And I don't think that I'm the same person that I was 3 years ago either.
You're not even close, but like way more, whatever you want to call it, like a higher consciousness level, right? Or more advanced or what? You're not any smarter. You've just done a ton of emotional work. But hold on. That's a very interesting question. So 20 years you had a practice and you did you did family law and estate planning. So like you had a real impact on people's lives. You weren't like a corporate paper monkey shuffling, you know, helping GM add $10 million to its bottom line, right?
Correct.
Like okay. So think about that. Why? So that work is actually impactful. Like that really changes people's lives. Why is this work more impactful to you?
It's more impactful to me because this work on the surface, it's about flat fees. It's nothing about flat fees or mindset even or money or, you know, any of the other things that people.
Those are ways you're getting into the stuff that actually moves the needle. Yes.
Correct.
They're important, but they're not the core. I'm with
correct.
You.
So why this is more impactful to me is my work is a part of people healing, people growing. And it is changing then how they practice, how they show up with their clients. You know, it just spreads so much more. It just spreads so much more. And I was talking to Philip, who's a mutual friend of ours.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, the judges. Oh my God. Like someday if I could get my hands on the judges and start them doing some of this work, like that could really change things. But I just feel like, I feel like it's more at the epicenter of being able to impact this person who impacts six people who impact, And it's just more impactful to me. Like, I, quite frankly, at this point, I would rather, that's a good question. And I've thought about it a little bit, but I'm changing people's insides. You know, the family law, yeah, it got, and I can say, I saved some kids' lives. The estate planning, I can absolutely say two cases right off the bat that I absolutely saved people's lives, because they would have, drug addicts would have gotten crap ton of money, and they would have, you know, but
it would have killed themselves with heroin.
They absolutely would have killed themselves. But this work is, it's changing people's insides for good.
Let me make an attempt at reframing what you just said to describe it more accurately. When you were an attorney, even though you were doing very important work that directly impacted real people's lives, you were in essence cleaning up messes.
Completely.
Despite your best efforts, when you clean up someone else's mess, unless you change the situation about how the mess is made, there's no estate planning and no family law that stops messes from being made in the future. You just clean up a mess that has been made, right?
Well, estate planning can prevent messes.
Okay, to some extent.
To some extent.
But like the two drug addicts you just talked about, you stopped them from getting a bunch of money, but they still, if they got better, it's because they had to go somewhere else to change how the messes were being made, right?
True. Okay. 100% true.
So that's what you're doing now.
Yeah.
You're not cleaning up messes anymore. You are working with people who want to feel better and do better, and you're helping them actually do that. So instead of cleaning up messes, you're stopping messes from being made, and instead helping people learn how to make something amazing.
Yeah. So let me ask.
No, hold on. But that's okay. A huge difference.
Oh, it's huge.
Like that. If you want to get to the core of,
I feel like that's why I'm here.
You want to get to the core of your first question, right? Like, what do you see attorneys? What do they not see? Mm-hmm. That actually is, I think, that is the thing I did not understand about the law. When one of the many things I did not understand when I picked going to law school was, your job as an attorney is very often, almost always often, you are cleaning up messes. You come into the situation after the mess has been made. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, you can say, hold on, you know, if I'm chief legal counsel at a corporation, I can stop messes. Okay, yeah. There are definitely attorneys who do work where they stop messes from being made. I'm not saying every single time, all the time, but most attorneys, their job is, I have to come into a disaster and then try and help clean it up, right? Which is, it's got to be done, man. Like the trash men have to exist. Attorneys have to exist. Like there's no shame in that work. It's valuable, meaningful work. But all of us, as we grow and evolve, if we can, would love to maybe stop those messes from being made in the first place.
Right.
Right? And so that's what you've done. You've gone from, I'm stopping a drug addict from killing himself, to I'm stopping an attorney from destroying herself and helping her build a better life for herself and her family. That is an evolution. That is going up the chain of consciousness.
Yeah. And the trajectory has changed. I mean, I have clients who are changing. I have one client who she showed up at her child's school and advocated for her child. And she said, I wouldn't have done that 6 months ago.
What? That's amazing. Why not?
Fear.
What was she afraid of? Without giving details about her, it's just the general thing, right? What was she afraid of?
That people would judge her. She's a minority, mm-hmm. a minority that has had a lot of hate mm-hmm. shown to them mm-hmm. And a lot of fear surrounding mm-hmm. them. So she didn't want to be.
She didn't want to stick her neck up.
She didn't want to stick out her neck.
Right.
And, you know, that's changing her daughters. And
yes. But which is probably part of why she became an attorney, by the way.
Right. And we
But then she wasn't seeing that in her own life.
Right. Completely. Completely. Yes. And what's so interesting to me, and I was the same way, I don't think to the extent that so many attorneys are, but it's fascinating to me. You know, I have this group and a lot of attorneys, I think there's like 2,700 interested in flat fees. Like we're already warm. Okay. Yeah. And the fear is so palpable. And even though we have, I'm the head of the group, I use flat fees the majority of my practice, including in litigation. There's other rock stars in the group who, you know, over a decade using flat. And I can't tell you, at least once or twice a week, there will be a thread in the discussion of, you can't do that. And then it's, well, you know, you don't understand because I'm in rural, blah, blah, blah. Or, you know, my jacket is red or
I'm different.
Is green.
I'm different than you. Yeah. You've never thought of my problem.
You haven't thought of my problems. And, you know, it's like, well, no, you can't go to the moon. And I'm like, we're on the freaking moon. Like, what are you talking about? Yeah. So like, A, what is that? And B, why are these people in my group? I mean, I don't want them to leave. Like, I'm glad they're there. But like, I don't, why are you here?
Well, hold on. It's a great question. You know the answer. What's the answer to that? Let's start with the second one. Why are they in the group?
They want it. They're at least interested in it. They at least are wanting to maybe stick their, they actually want to be in the pool. So, you know, they're milling around the pool. They're walking around the pool, but they don't want to do the hard, scary, cold water of jumping in the pool.
Right. So instead, they project their fears onto you. Well, this isn't possible.
Right.
Right. So that's, they're in the group because this is this is basic psychology. They are in the group because if they can prove that you're wrong, then they don't have to have any courage and they don't have to take this leap. So like, no, the moon example is great. They're literally sitting on Earth as a metaphor saying no one can go to the moon. And you're up on the moon saying, hey, we're here.
Like, no.
But they're like, no, you're not there. No one can go there. Because if they tell themselves the story that no one can go to the moon, they don't have to try and go to the moon, and there's no chance of them failing. Right. Same thing with flat fees. If they tell themselves this is impossible, the thing that they want actually secretly, then they don't have to risk doing it, and they don't have to risk failure. And I'll bet for a huge number of attorneys, flat fee is a gateway into admitting they don't actually like being an attorney or showing up the way they have to as an attorney. I would bet it starts to, it gets us back.
Okay, tell me about that.
Well, okay. So this is my sort of guess, right? So I'm not the flat fee expert. Like I didn't even sit for the bar. So I don't want to act like I'm an expert on being an attorney because I am not. But I am an expert on the mindset of attorneys because you said I deal with them all day. And so there's a narrative about what you have to do and who you have to be a good attorney, right? A story. And no one tells ever the whole story, but what you have is a group of attorneys who have all, like the narrative has kind of formalized or sort of formally and informally codified. And anyone who goes outside of that is most of them hate their lives or they hate large portions of their lives being an attorney, but because that, well, everyone else is doing it and this is the way we're supposed to do it and I'm doing it that way. So I'm an attorney and I get a little bit of money, I get a little bit of status. And so I'll just keep being miserable because I have these two little crumbs and I'm going to cling on to these crumbs until I fucking die, right? And anyone who is outside that narrative is actually a threat to their psychological, the story they're telling themselves.
Right.
Is I get to have these crumbs as long as I accept this horrible narrative that crushes my soul. And then along comes Brita, right? Who says, no, you can actually be an attorney and you can be a happy attorney. And one of the ways to do that is to not charge hourly, but instead charge flat rate, right? Which is like, from someone outside the attorney world, is like, who cares? But inside the world, no, seriously, because I'm like, who gives a shit?
And you tell me buy everything every day, and only attorneys are like, what? What? This is so new. I'm like, that's how you bought your coffee this morning. What are you talking about? This is so, what?
Exactly. Right. So to me, I'm like, yeah, great. That makes perfect sense. I actually like that more. And you're happier. Cool. Let's go. But for no, because the narrative for attorneys is this is the way we do it. Right. And anyone outside of that is a threat to the way we do it. And you start pulling because they know. They know deep down that the narrative is bullshit. If they didn't know, or if they didn't think the narrative was bullshit, then pulling on the threads wouldn't be a threat to them, right? They wouldn't have a reaction to it. Like you could come on and say, or someone could come on and say, I own a book publishing company, book writing and publishing company. They could say books are done, they're doomed, they're not the future. And I'll laugh at them and I'll say, well, you might want to go check the data on that because the world disagrees, and then move on. Won't even bother me because I know what the numbers are. I live with it every day. But if my industry was contracting and I was very insecure about it and didn't want to recognize it to myself, then someone saying, wow, books are dead, I'd be like, fuck you, they're not dead. Right. And I'd fight in anger and blah, 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 right? Because I wouldn't want to accept that fact.
Well, and I'll tell you, you know, we better start accepting that back. Arizona, and I think it was Utah, I forget, just made it so that non-attorneys can own law firms. This is kind of a big deal, especially given, you know, how we manage law firms. And there's still attorneys, now with big firms, the billable requirement for big firms is 2,900 hours a year, which I've done the math. It's like physically impossible.
What? Okay? Like 2,900 billable.
Can't do it. Okay.
Well, I mean, you can do it if honestly, you literally don't do anything else. Because 29 billable is like, what is it, 35 or something like that actual at least.
Right. It's crazy. It's crazy. And there's still
that's like 100. That's like 90-100 hour weeks.
I know.
That's like you get 7.5 hours of sleep.
I know.
And nothing else.
I've done that. And, you know, that's big firms and, you know, they're not in my sphere because, you know, they're the big firms. And blah, blah, blah. But even the smaller people are still, even in my group, like putting on Facebook, bragging that they're working at 11 o'clock on a Friday night. I mean, this.
Well, so hold on.
The more I work, the closer to God I get. I'll tell you that shit better change because.
No. Stop. Okay. Listen to what you're doing. Look how pervasive it is. You're saying this shit better change. Well, why are you even worried about them?
Well,
no, because hold on.
Okay.
Is your job? No. Do you want your life to be, I'm going to be happy in my practice and I'm those who want to be happy, I'm going to help them? Or do you want to wade into the people who have adopted and bought into the I have to work until I die and be miserable narrative and argue with them? Which would you rather do?
I want to stick with my people, and I feel some responsibility to, you know, at least warn that boat over there is about ready to go over a cliff.
If it is, you don't need to tell them. They know. Now I'm telling, and the more, so let me put this in attorney speak. You know as well as I do, right? Because you've been a defense attorney, that if the prosecutor makes a claim about, you know, the defendant was at place X during time Y, if you don't contest that claim, then from now on, it's accepted as fact that they were at that place at that time. And so the only argument then is what they did at that place at that time, right?
Right.
Okay. That's framing, right?
Right.
Okay. So it's the exact same way. It's the exact same thing, right? They have the people who are the work till you die people have accepted that narrative and that frame. What you are doing and the people like you are doing is saying, hold on, there's a whole different frame for being an attorney. And it's this frame. You will never, and I agree, that's the better frame, but you are never going to win by arguing against their frame. If you go in and say, no, working all night's terrible, they're gonna look at you and be like, what are you talking about? I live in a narrative where every piece of evidence that I see is interpreted through the work till you die frame. So like you have to build the other frame. You said it earlier when you said we're already on the moon.
Right.
So
what are they getting out of the work till you die?
They're either going to or they're not.
But what are they getting out of that narrative?
Okay, that's a great question. What are they getting out of that? So the things they think they're getting are status and money, and some of them tell themselves a story about accomplishment or whatever.
Right.
What they're actually getting is they are avoiding feeling their emotions or dealing with anything in their life that's painful.
That's what they're doing.
And so if you want to win, there's a very simple way to win. You don't ever argue against them, ever, because it's a losing. Because as soon as you argue against them, you've accepted their frame. You just set a different frame. And you've got the perfect name, the happier attorney. You want to be happy?
We're over here.
You know, but. Okay, cool. When you're sick of your shit and you're done arguing, come over here and see what we have. Until then, I've got nothing to say to you.
You're right. I talk about the story in the book about an attorney in Seattle who was big firm, and make a long story short, she was a complete work. She was in that frame, and she got a brain tumor. And I knew that she had been diagnosed, and I see her like a month later giving a CLE. That's what you're choosing to do. That's what you're choosing to do. You've just been told you've got, you know, X months to live, and that's what you're choosing to do. She died. Her obituary, if you Google it, everything that talks about her talks about what a great attorney she was and how hard she worked.
Rita, that's what you want at the end
of your life.
But you understand right now you're doing the same thing they're doing. In a lesser way.
How?
You're talking about her.
Right.
Every attorney knows 20 people like that.
Right.
But how many attorneys know happy attorneys?
Not too many.
I'm offering you a perspective, and for your listeners, you are talking about them because part of you is still insecure about, is it possible to be a happy attorney? Am I allowed to be?
Am I right?
You're still fighting all those battles, which is totally fine.
Am I really an attorney if I'm only happy? Work 20 hours a week?
Am I allowed to be a happy attorney who works 20 hours a week?
Like, are they going to actually take my bar card? I don't know. They haven't yet.
Well, I'm going to tell you something, right? We talked about this a little bit earlier before we started recording. This is for everyone listening as well. And this is going to sound a little bit kooky and a little bit crazy, but it has helped me. Every time I go more into this belief, my life gets better and better and better. And I have an amazing life. Like I don't work 20 hours a week. I'm not sure I work 5 hours a week now.
Yeah, but you're a rich author and
Okay. So you're right. And I started so poor that I couldn't afford protein. And so how did I get here? One of the main ways that I got here is and there's levels to this, right? So this is not a binary thing, but really understanding and going into the notion that I get to create my own reality. The more seriously I take that, the better my life gets. And I don't mean necessarily taking it literally, right? Like I can't magic a castle out of my brain this instant next, you know, like in a field or something. Like obviously that's kooky, but if I decide I really want a castle, there's actually ways to do that, right? I mean, our friend Philip just bought a castle in Ireland, like literally, right? But it seems real simple. So yeah, of course I understand. We create our own reality. No. Stop for a second. Every thought you have, every decision you make, and the frame within which those decisions are made creates your reality, right? And so like yesterday, I was actually meeting with a friend of mine And he was doing exactly what you're doing. He's an entrepreneur. And he was talking about these other entrepreneurs in Austin that he can't stand, and they're negative, and they're talking trash about people. And I'm like, why are they in your life? And he's like, well, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, hold on. Because they're not his business partners. I'm like, do you hang out with them? He's like, well, yeah, like a little bit. And he sells high-end wine. So he like sells some of them wine. And I'm like, I mean, you got other people that work for you. They can talk to them and sell them wine, right? And he's like, well, yeah. And I'm like, do you go to their parties? He's like, yeah, I guess, you know, like, okay. So you've chosen to have these people in your life. You know who they are, right? Right or wrong, good or bad. I'm not judging them, but you know who they are. You've chosen to go to their parties, and now you're complaining about them. So you've created this reality that you're in. You're getting something out of it. What is it, right? And then he's like, oh, yeah. Same thing. You're doing the same thing. Like right now, you can be a happy attorney, or you can complain about attorneys who aren't happy. But you can't really be both. Does that make sense?
Yes.
As an effectiveness thing too. Yes, of course, address. If an unhappy attorney has questions or like, hold on, how does this work? Absolutely address it. Absolutely talk about it. Of course, show them, hey, look, you're on Earth. Here are the 15 steps to get to the moon. They're right there. Of course. 100%. But to keep coming back to it, right?
No, it's ego. It's you know, this is new and it's scary. And I'm one of the first. I mean, there have been other attorneys that have written about flat fees. I think I'm one of the first to be so public about it. And
you are.
And to be out there,
you are.
It's scary. I mean, I have gotten some personal attacks, and it's scary when you have an idea that is so against our legal culture, and you do feel like, okay, this is so simple. Like, how can this be right? But it is. It's true.
Most people would rather have the pain that they are familiar with than the joy that they don't know.
Right.
So most people would rather have the pain that they know than the joy that they don't. Right. Yeah. And so like, that's just how people are, especially attorneys. I mean, you're dealing with a group of people who have chosen and stayed in a profession that is intentionally risk averse. It is designed around risk aversion, right? Which is part of what makes attorneys useful. Like, you know, to someone like me, who's like, hey, if you do that, you could get sued for millions of dollars. It's like, oh, I'm glad I knew that. Thank you for telling me. So there's a benefit to risk aversion, right? Like our CPA and our accounting guys, like as long as you don't base your life off complete risk aversion, limiting risk is a good thing. There is a role for that. The problem is when limiting risk becomes the only goal, then you don't have a life.
No, when you see a tiger behind every bush, whether there's a tiger there or not,
then you can't move.
You're
frozen. Yes.
And then you get to say, you know, I'm an attorney. I have attorneys making, you know, 50 grand a year when there's no reason they couldn't be making 600 if they wanted to.
That's the ultimate extension of this, is that you keep making your life smaller until you don't have one.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's sad to me, especially when it doesn't have to be. And, you know,
so I'm going to give you it's a suggestion, take it or don't.
I think I got it, then comes
back. It's part of the battle. It's probably why you're a really good guide for your community, because like, think of this as a ladder, right? If they're on the ground, you're like three rungs up the ladder from them. So you can still see them and hear them and like, you know what their first rung is like and what the second rung is like and the third rung, because you're on the third rung, right? So you're actually a really good guide for them. Someone like me who kicked himself out of the profession 20 years ago on just that part of the ladder, because we're all on tons of different ladders at once.
Right.
I'm like 30 rungs up. So it's like, in a lot of ways, I'm actually not a good guide for them, aside from the fact that I'm not an attorney, right? Which is means I'm on a different ladder. But like, I don't remember what it's like that well to have that mindset, right? So like, you are actually a fantastic guide. The gift I'm offering, you don't have to take, is to make it part of your thought process to really understand, oh yeah, the best thing I can do for myself and for other attorneys is to be the example of what a happy attorney is, to show that this is possible and to tell them exactly how I got there. And once you do that, you don't have to argue anymore. Your life is proof.
Right. Right. And I'm pretty conscious of that. I mean, it's, you know, step by step, but I'm pretty conscious of that. On kind of a side note, just to give a little bit more brain food to attorneys, you are a consumer of legal products.
Yes. We spend quite a bit with it.
Okay.
Yes.
I know this is, would you rather pay hourly and not know how much you're going to pay? Like a flat fee, sir?
So I have a company, Scribe Media. We're well into the eight figures. We're 6 years old, like top line revenue. Well, we did amazing last year. We grew top line 42% last year in COVID, and we grew.
And for a luxury product, by the way.
Luxury marketing product, no less. We hired, I think 17 new full-time and at least 70 new part-time or freelance. So we're all, including full-time and like consistent part-time freelance, we're well over 300 employees. And so we have multiple attorneys that we use. The biggest is one of the, she's not a partner yet, but I think she will be eventually, at Foley and Lardner, which is a huge law. They're like one of the four biggest law firms in the world, right? Foley's is about as big and prestigious as it gets. She's our main attorney. Like if we don't have a in-house counsel, but like she's basically our outsourced in-house counsel, right? She charges 75% of our stuff flat fee. Foley and Lardner. She's a sixth year associate. I think she's on partnership track. If I'm speaking out of turn, Julie, I'm sorry, but like I think she is. She's kicking ass. Like whatever she's doing, she's kicking ass for us. We've referred three or four huge companies to her, and then I think she signed all of them, and she's kicking ass for them. And so she's a rainmaker at Foley. I don't know where she falls on their scale or not, but she's a rainmaker at Foley is what I know. Because we've helped her make rain there. And I know she's done stuff on her own too. And 75% of the things she charges for are flat. Basically, everything that's possible for her to flat fee charge us, she charges us flat fee. And it's one of the reasons we love her. It's one of the reasons we stay with her. We could go to, and there's good law firms in Austin. She's in Boston. She's far the fuck away, man. And like my CEO especially is like big on in-person stuff. He doesn't care. She's so good and she charges flat fee. But we could find a badass law firm in Austin that would probably charge us per hour, man, at least 30% less, maybe 50% less, because her per hour fee is it's no joke. I mean, she's a 6 year associate at Foley. Like she's no joke. And so I don't know what it is, 750, 800, 900, something like that. And so we could pay less, right? But it's funny. And I'll tell you, as a consumer of legal stuff, it's so weird. I would rather pay a little bit more for flat fee than hourly. Because hourly, it feels like we're not on the same side of the table. It feels like your job is to screw me. Like hourly, it's like, oh man, I got to call. Like I actually have to call her. I know she's going to charge me $70, spend 3 minutes on the phone. It's bullshit, right? Like it makes you hate your attorney, right? It makes you hate them, which is stupid because they're on my team and I want them on my team, right? And so now, if we were obnoxious clients who are like always calling her with nonsense, okay, maybe it's a little different, right? But we're not. Like, I don't want to waste her time. I don't want her wasting my time. So we talk when we have to talk, right? But flat fee, just, it makes me feel like she's on my team. It makes me feel like we're going forward together. We couldn't imagine, like, I can't imagine what it would take to get us to switch. And we're a small company. with a top five international law firm. That was the, economically, it makes no sense. They charge flat fee. Yeah. And she's a baller attorney, right? So, but there's a lot of baller attorneys. She's not the only one. You know?
Right.
So I don't even listen to your flat fee stuff. I don't know if I just made all your points or not, but
you did. Because I want to kind of end with one thing that you have, you know, someday, hopefully I'll get to the point where you don't ask me this anymore, but I don't know. One of the most impactful things that you asked me was, what are you getting out of this?
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of want to end on that with attorneys who, you know, have listened to this, who are interested in creating a practice that works for them, a life that works for them. Where did you come up with that? Like, what would you say to them if they were in front of you? What would you ask them?
You know, what's funny is, this is very important. Listen to this. I wouldn't tell them anything. I wouldn't. I am not in the business of trying to convince anyone of anything. If you are happy being miserable, go be miserable. I don't care. Or if you're not miserable, cool, great. Go have a good life. If you are content with your misery, then you aren't ready. Then just go over there and be miserable until you're sick of being miserable. When you're sick of being miserable, then I know plenty of stuff that might be able to help, and I'm happy to tell you. And if it doesn't, cool. I'll tell you other people who might be able to help you with whatever your issue is. I am not in the business. I used to be in the business of telling people what they could or should do, what they should do. And then I realized that was just my own ego projecting my stuff out, right? Like, because the more I told, when the finger goes out at people, then it's like, it's me avoiding my stuff, right? And so like when I really, not just realized that intellectually, but internalized it, you notice how on the call, I wasn't like, Britta, here's what you need to do. I said, Britta, here's a suggestion, or here's something you might want to consider, or here's whatever. Do what you want or don't do what you want. It's up to you. It doesn't impact me. You know, like I'm not going to be angry if you choose things that are different than me. You're different. But like if I was very insecure about my choices and wanted everyone else to pick the same thing so that I could feel good about my choices, I would very much be like, well, you need to do what I do. That's the right way.
Yeah. And I have shifted that as well, because, you know, when I started, it was like, everybody should charge flat fees. This is crazy not to. Now, look, this is an alternative. This is the life of people who are using flat fees well.
The best persuasion is living it.
Yeah. Yeah. And if people are ready, they're ready. If they're not, well, okay.
There's no other better. Be the example.
Well, I hope that you have enjoyed today's podcast and YouTube video with Tucker Max. And if you have gotten any value out of this, I would ask that you like, subscribe, click on the link below to get in our Facebook group, Attorneys and Flat Fees, if you are not in there already. If you want information on what it looks like to work with me, click the link, breedalong.com. And thank you for joining us. And it is possible, just remember, it is possible to be an attorney and actually have a great life. So take care.